but there are points that we'll go over. Now, as we read this here in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1 through 5, we'll be coming back to a certain part of this. But the thing to notice here is right at the beginning, in verse 1, there's a charge that's given. Now, a charge here is something to wake up and pay attention to, the things that follow, and then to keep the charge that's committed. I charge thee, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. But watch thou in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry. I often say that the qualifications for a preacher are found here in these passages, and I think that a case can be made for that. But I also think that this is showing here some of what was going on in New Testament times and what was necessary there, and not just for someone who's a preacher or evangelist is the word that's used there, but it's also things that everybody needs to be paying attention to and everybody needs to be striving to do. And I got the idea for a title from something. When I was a boy, we had a radio station that wasn't too far from us, about 12 or 15 mile away, something like that. And my parents listened to it. It was an AM/FM radio. They played about the same thing on either one that you listened to. Of course, the FM came in a little better, so Mom always listened to that. And every morning on top of the refrigerator, right up there where it was flat up there, we finally had one that, you know, didn't have the working parts up on the top, but right up there was the radio. These great big old jobs, you know, probably had 100 tubes inside of it or something. And she'd have it tuned in on there, and not only could you hear the same thing on each station, each band, but they played about the same songs every morning. They just didn't change much. And one of them that they would play was a song, and boy, I can hear it right now. It was "Give Me That Old Time Religion," and they played that every morning, it seemed like, at one particular point. And I thought about that, and I thought about, you know, old time religion. Actually, what we find in the Bible is old time religion. So what we're looking at is that very thing. And I don't know if we realize how much old time religion is needed today. Now, I know there are some that think that they're practicing it. In other words, they think they're practicing the things of the New Testament. And there are some that think that they're preaching it. But on further analysis, you know, it's like that. Like I was watching a sports thing there, and they went to the videotape. You know, on further review, you find out that, well, it's just not what it appears to be. But it's to our advantage to examine the old-time religion that's in the Scriptures and see if we are in compliance with it. And that's what we're going to do today. Now, the first thing is to notice that in the Scriptures, there is a plea for old-time religion. And it doesn't happen in the New Testament. Probably, and you'll find this is the case. Let's go over here to Jeremiah 6. In Jeremiah 6, we'll find a passage here that's found in Jeremiah's day, long time before the New Testament. But it's in Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 16, and we're familiar with this particular passage. But it's a plea for old-time religion. When it says, Jeremiah 6, verse 16, "Thus says the Lord, stand ye in the ways, and see, and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk therein, and you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in them." So there was a problem, you know. And this plea that's right here, to think about the old paths, and dare we say, old-time religion. There's a plea here. And the plea is necessary because there's been a departure. See, there are people that are saying there, we will not walk therein. In other words, they're walking a different way right then when the plea is being made. So it was something that was taking place. It was a plea that was germane to the times. And Jeremiah is telling them, well, you need to look at the old paths. Whatever they were doing and however they went. But there was a need to return to the old paths. And you can see, you know, the sad part of this is that there were some that simply refused to do that. They were kind of just bold about it. We will just not walk therein. Now, Israel had a constant struggle with this. This wasn't the first time, wasn't the last time. But it had really been a problem. And it all boiled down to the same thing over and over again. The Jews did not want to stay with old-time religion. That was their particular problem. And what they did, they had something now that was an alternative to this. And if you go back to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. What they did, they wanted to just wander off after other gods. Exodus chapter 20. I'll be there in just a minute here. Exodus chapter 20, and look at verses 2 through 6. This, of course, is the chapter where you find the Ten Commandments. I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Now that's important. Remember that. You shall have no other gods before me. You'll not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generations of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. And what's the very first commandment? We'll have no other God before me. Now this is said because there were those that were wandering after other gods. This was a case of just blatant disobedience. There's no other way to look at it but that. But it's also, nobody was forcing them to do this. It was, after all, a matter of choice. Now, later on, in the book of Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 8, you find this. You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day. This part right here. Every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. Ain't no going to do that. Take a look around at what goes on today, just in society in general. What's the big problem? And we could say, well, it's this and well, it's that. And you know what we'll do is we'll go over here and we'll try to isolate something. And really, it's bigger than just one thing. It's a whole bunch of things. But they all have something in common out here in society. It's that right there. Every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. I like it, it's okay. I do it, it's fine. And they don't want anybody to say anything else about it. That's it. And this is supposed to be the beginning and the end of all discussion. It's right in my eyes. And we just see all kinds of things like this. Well, what else happens? How about not just in society, but how about in religious matters? Is that not what's going on in the world round about us? We're going to do whatever is right in our own eyes. We like this. And that's what we'll do. We will look, we will search until we find something that's compatible with our position or our situation or whatever it is. And you don't have to look very hard. Don't have to look very far. You can find it. It's a major problem. today. And it's not a new problem. No, it's an old one. Israel was having this kind of problem. And what did they need to do? What was the solution? Well, the solution was the old-time religion, the old paths, like Jeremiah said ultimately. So it's a major contributing factor that goes on today. And likewise, you know, there's a call that needs to go out to return to the old-time religion. Now, back in Exodus again, in chapter 32, after the giving of the law, and for several chapters after Exodus 20, there's more things that are given there as Moses lays out, and some of it in real detail, how everything's supposed to be, how things are supposed to be made, and how things are, even how things are going to be set up, and who's going to do this, and I mean everything. Who's going to carry what whenever Israel is on the move? And how they'll put up the tabernacle and how they'll take it down. Everything, all the details. It even gets down to the point to where each tribe's going to be in a certain place as they move. This one's going to be on the east, this one on the west, and all that. I mean, the detail that goes over all these things at some length. Not just here, but other places as well. And then they get to Mount Sinai. And Moses goes up the mountain. You know the story. And how the mountain was surrounded by a cloud and there was thunderings and lightnings and everything else. And the people down below, they were just scared out of their wits. And Moses went up there. I think it was Caleb and Joshua went up so far. And Moses walked into the cloud, however you want to visualize that. But he walked out of their sight. But he had told them, you stay here. I'll be back. I wonder if they had their doubts about that. But they were right there. And Moses goes up into the cloud. And here comes the tablets. Giving of the law. All the things. Bringing it all down to a head. All that happening right there at Mount Sinai. Well, while Moses is gone, and not for a very long time, really, the people down below, they're fickle. They forget about him. They think he's gone up in there, that place where we're just scared. We're scared even to look at. Not even supposed to touch it, you know. That's the end of him. So in chapter 32 and verse 1, when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together with Aaron and said unto him, watch, up, make us gods which shall go before us. What do we read in chapter 20? I'm the God that brought you out of the land of Egypt. I've been the one who's been before you all the time. You'll have no other gods before me. Make us a god which shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt. Now they're well aware of their history. We know not what's become of him. We're not worried about that. He's gone. We don't care. So there comes a major shift in direction that's happening here. And what do we see in all this as they, you know, make us these gods that go before us? Well, Aaron complied with the people. Look at verses 2 and 2 through 4. He said, Aaron said to them, well, break off the gold. Give me the gold of your sons, your daughters, bring it to me. And they did this. And he received them at their hand, all this gold, and he fashioned it with a graving tool. Anybody forcing him to do this? No. And after he had made a molten calf, they said, these be the God, thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. It's a choice. It's blatant disobedience. They've jumped into that just wide open. But what we have here, and we see evidence of this time and again, is this shift in direction. And the shift in direction is away from God where it should be to something else. And most of the time in Old Testament times, it was these other gods. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 30. This again addresses this same thing. Isaiah chapter 30. And we'll look at 9 through 11. That this is a rebellious people. Back in verse 1 it says, "Woe to this rebellious people." But this is a rebellious people. Lying children. Children that will not hear the law of the Lord. Of course they hear it, but they don't pay attention to it. That's what's meant. We understand that. And these lying children, they say to the seers, "See not." And to the prophets, "Prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits. Get you out of the way. Turn aside out of the path." Would that be the old path? Would that be the old time religion we've been talking about here for a few minutes? "Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us." That God, Jehovah, get him out of here. Get him out of the way. You think these people wanted to do things what was right in their own eyes? Yes. And they wanted prophets and seers that would tell them what they wanted to hear. If we think we got a corner on the market in the 21st century, well, no, we really don't. And the shift here in direction was from what was needed to what was wanted. Boy, there's a big difference in that. What you need and what you want. I remember when I was, I don't know, about so big. And my dad told me one time, boy, there was something, I mean, I just thought I wasn't going to make it. I don't remember what it is now. But I thought I wasn't going to make it if I didn't have whatever this was. I don't know. I don't remember if it was a toy or a baseball bat, probably something to do with baseball. A new ball or a glove. I don't know what it was. But I'm telling you. And my dad said that I wasn't going to get it. And I made the mistake of saying, "Well, I need it." And he says, "Son, what you need and what you want are two different things." Boy, I found out. I thought I needed that. And I found out pretty quick. No, I just wanted it because I never got it. Now, if I really needed it and it was necessary, I'd have had it. There's a big difference in that. And people today think, "Oh, well, we need this and we need that and we need the other." Really? It's what you want? Israel thought they needed all these things. We need these prophets that are going to come in here and tickle our ears. We looked at that in 2 Timothy 4. That's what was going on back there. Prophesy to us deceits. This is what we want to hear. You tell us what we want to hear. Don't tell us what we need to hear. You tell us what we want to hear. Well, yeah. That's what happens. Now, the New Testament example here is right there where we looked at just a few moments ago in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. You know, I have found, it seems to me, that people don't have any problem with 1 Timothy chapter or 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verses, say, 1 and 2. Don't have any problem with that. The charge or preach the word, be instant in season. Don't have any problem with that. But boy, verse 3 and 4. But we don't want to hear that. Why don't you want to hear that? It's what you need to hear. Well, it might be what you think we need to hear, but we don't want to hear that. Why is that? Well, have a look. He says, "The time will come in the first century. The time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine." Is that old time religion? "But after their own lust, after what they want, after their desires," that's what lust means, desires, strong desires, "shall they heap to themselves teachers." They'll find them. If you're going to heap them up, there must be plenty of them. "Having itching ears," that's the one, "and they'll turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables." And they'll love to have it so. We don't want to hear that. What's going on in the first century? Do we close our eyes and pretend it doesn't happen now? I don't think so. You know, it even happens in churches of Christ. Let's be honest about it. But some do not want that old-time religion. And some are willing to give whatever is wanted. It works both ways. You know, the teachers exist because there's those that want this kind of thing that's taught. And they know that there's all these people out here. So they'll accommodate those people. And we'll listen and we'll support you. And we'll cheer it on. Give us more. Amen. To something that's described as not being the truth in fables. And curiously, the people that cheer this on criticize those that call for the old-time religion. I think it's curious. But, like Ecclesiastes writer says, there's no new thing under the sun. It happened in the first century. It happened in Isaiah's day, Jeremiah's day. It happened at the foot of Mount Sinai. And all of these, they've got the promises. They promise much, but they're unable to deliver. You know, in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 17 through 19, now it's describing false teachers there. And one of the things that it says is that these false teachers, they're like wells without water. A well has the promise of water. And so you see it and you think to yourself, there's water there. And water was of a valuable commodity back in these days. And so they go over to that well and they have something. And let's say that you couldn't just dip it right out of it. You know, you're going to have to let this down in there. You got a vessel of some kind. And you toss it in. And you think to yourself as you toss it in, you're going to hear what? You're going to hear a splash. But you don't hear a splash, you hear a dull thud. There's no water there. But the well promised water. There's none there. And a false teacher being like that, oh, it promised great things. But they're wells without water. You know, we've been promised lots of things. Just in society in general. But we were told back in the 60s when all this free love and everything else, you know, and just forget about marriage and just cohabit together. We used to not say cohabit. We used to say shack up. But you know what that was and all that and everything. And oh, we'll just be so much better for that. We're still waiting for the better part of this. But they promised these things. And they were wells without water. We've been promised lots of things. It'll all make it better. And look at this. I think there's been a great injustice done to our children in this country. All the things that have changed in the education system. And they all say everything that we do here is all going to make it better. And one thing and another. And our kids will just be able to handle things better. They'll be smarter and this, that, and the other. And what's happened with the grades over the last two or three decades? We're still waiting on the better. So many things where we've seen this and heard this. So many things. Let's just not pay a whole lot of close attention to that Bible. It will be so much better. Let's just not do what this part of the Scriptures say, because after all, it's not right in our eyes. And we'll be better. Wells without water. You know how that works. And there's a stern warning that's given there in Galatians chapter 1, verse 6 and 9. If an angel from heaven were to come with some other gospel, don't believe it, don't follow it, and let the person who's got that be accursed. Do you know that is the strongest word that can be used there? That word accursed. I think it's kind of cleaned up for us in English. Damned would be a better word. Anathema is the idea. It's strong language. But we want to do things. We're not paying attention to that. We'll just kind of do things our. We'll just kind of make it up as we go. And we'll promise great things. Now, people today do not want the old-time religion, even though it's exactly what they need. That's curious, too. I'd like to look at a key point of old-time religion, and then the lesson will be yours. You're familiar with Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Now, there they are up there. They're a little bit small to get them all on one slide. But I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We know those passages. I had somebody tell me one time, boy, you preachers really like those two verses a lot, don't you? Yeah, we like them a lot. They're good. I think that they ought to be repeated more and more and more. I don't know whether there's a limit on it. But the thing that I like best about this, and I think most preachers do, and what we should have an appreciation of what this is calling for, is right there in the middle of that. Do not be conformed to this world. Whew. That's pretty serious. Don't be like these people that want some other God that led us out of Egypt. Don't be like these people out there that are crying out for prophets to speak to us smooth things and things we like, and the teachers that heap up. Don't be conformed to the world. The world doesn't want and doesn't like the things of the truth of the gospel. They'll turn away from it. They'll fight it. They'll argue against it. And the devil's behind it all. I understand that. But this is the battle that takes place. That business about do not be conformed to the world. Robertson's word pictures, he says this, do not take the world as your fashion plate. I think he had an idea of how the world, you know, conducts itself and dresses itself and other things like that. The way that the world presents things and so on. Yeah, I understand that's what he meant. But it's anything really that the world presents. Don't let them be the ones who are setting the mark. But too many times we do. Too many times we let the world, you know, set the mark, set the standard, and then what do? Well, we kind of borrow from it. I had a friend of mine one time that said, you know, he said that the church has never, ever, ever come up with one false practice or one false teaching on our own. We've never done that. Now, I tell you what, when he first said that, I looked at him and I thought, are you like Rip Van Winkle? You've been asleep for the last so many years. I thought it was but then he said, no, we haven't come up with anything on our own. We've borrowed it. We borrowed it from the world. We've borrowed it from the denominations. That's where we've got all these things. And sometimes we couldn't just borrow them fast enough. Good point. So do not take the world as your fashion plate. Albert Barnes in his commentary says that this may refer to anything pertaining to the habit, manner, dress, style of living, etc. of others. I seem to remember a passage in 1 Corinthians how evil companions, evil company corrupt good morals. But what is this? Do not be conformed to this world. Well, think about that and think about that problem that we looked at. What was it? Deuteronomy 12:8. Everybody did whatever was right in their own eyes. Don't be conformed to the world. You'll end up doing whatever's right in your own eyes. That's how the world does things. So don't be like that. Now, old-time religion means to do what God says to do. And it's really... That's where you start. Now, it's not all that simple, I understand, but that's where you start. That's where it's at right there. You know, the wise man, and we tell our children the story about the wise man who built his house on the rock in contradistinction to the foolish man who built his house on the sand. Now, both of those individuals built a house. I don't think the problem isn't with the house. The problem isn't that one man got more rain than the other got. That's not the problem there. No, the problem is that where they built this. You can understand that when the floods came up, that the house built on the rock would stand and the house on the sand would not. But is that all it's talking about? Is this just about construction advice? No, no, no. Behind this, the wise man, the one that built his house on the rock, that's the one who hears these sayings of mine and does them. That's the wise man. In verses 24 and 25, the foolish man is one who hears the same things and doesn't do them. So, old-time religion means you do what God says to do. You be the wise man doing that. And we need to keep our mind focused. You know, it's real easy to find yourself distracted by something else. Got one of our grandkids right now having some problems in school, and the problem is he's having a problem staying focused. He wants to rush through his work. And the teachers have identified this as the problem. So instead of working out whatever it is that he's doing, you know, it's hurry up with this just to get it done, just get it over with. Like there's some kind of a merit badge for getting done first. I don't know. Anyway. And then realizing that this is the problem, his teacher thinks, well, I've got an idea on how to help this, and tells him that you can't go out for recess until you finish your paper. Well, after hearing that, he's about setting that paper on fire. I thought the solution made the situation worse. He's less focused now than he was before. We had to start this all over again. That's what happens when your focus gets away from it. You know, you got to start all over again. You got to go back and get the focus right on the right things. Colossians chapter 3 tells us about this in verses 1 and 2. If you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Now, okay, turn your focus in this direction, and then what? Set your affection or set your mind on things above and not on the things of the earth. They're distractions. Don't pay attention to those things. Keep your mind focused. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Jesus asked a rhetorical question there in Mark chapter 8, verses 36 through 37. He said, what would you take in exchange for your soul? What would a man do? That's a rhetorical question. He knows what the answer is. But he's asking that question so that the people that hear it, they'll answer that and realize this is the right answer here. What would you take in exchange for your soul? What would you take? Oh, there's people that have sold their souls for a number of things that just make you shake your head. What would you take? Of course, we would understand that while a lot of people have taken just a lot of surprising things in exchange for their soul, we realize that the right answer is nothing. Nothing. Nothing in the world for the soul. It's the greatest possession that you have. You wouldn't exchange it at all. That's right. And so what will you do? Well, then I'll do whatever God says I need to do. Take a look at the temptations of Jesus and what it's all about with the devil is he's trying to get Jesus, you do what I say to do. Fall down and worship me. Jump off this building. You do what I tell you to do. He wouldn't do it. He's going to do what God says to do. Not going to take anything in exchange for that. Not even all the kingdoms of the world. And then finally, Colossians chapter 1. and verse 27. It says there, to whom God would make known what is the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles. Well, what is it? Which is Christ in you. Now look at the last part. The hope of glory. The hope of glory is in Christ. It's not anywhere else. So what's the solution? Well, we need to be like the wise man. We need to keep our mind focused. Don't take anything in exchange. And remember always that our hope is in Christ Jesus. Well, the lesson is yours by way of invitation. If there's one here tonight that we could help become a child of God, or to get back on the right track, or to continue in the faith of Christ, whatever the thing, whatever might be necessary to help you tonight, what you need to do is just make your desire known. Song's been selected. We're going to be singing that in just a moment. And if you're subject, why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.